You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
I'm Daljit Dhaliwal, in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. As the son of an Iranian father and a Jewish American mother, a couple united by a commitment to an impending socialist revolution, Saeed Seyrafrizadeh spent his childhood working to make the comrades proud. He tells a story of his youth in When Skateboards Will Be Free, a memoir of a political childhood. It's published by the Dial Press, and I'm glad it brings Saeed Seyrafrizadeh to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Hello and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So how did your parents get involved with the Socialist Workers' Party?
They met the Socialist Workers' Party on the campus of the University of Minnesota in the early 1960s. And interestingly enough, the University of Minnesota was sort of a hothouse of political activity for the Socialist Workers' Party. They considered it the cradle of the movement because some of their early leaders had come from the Minneapolis area. But that's where they met and were first introduced to the ideas, and it set their lives in motion from there.
What attracted them to revolution, to socialism? Was it the 1960s? What do you think?
You know, that's a great question, and I think some of it is probably a desire to see social progress and change and to be a part of it, especially if it's the 1960s. Although I attribute a lot of it to their own personal makeup, especially when we get into the whole idea of their, you know, basically fanaticism regarding the Socialist Workers Party and revolution.
So there's these are diehard militants, are they?
They were diehard militants, and I think a lot of it was driven by a sense of anger, feelings of vengeance, feelings of guilt from having escaped their own unhappy upbringings. And now here they were, college students on this tranquil campus.
But both of them were pretty well-off middle-class people. I mean, they weren't sort of your average, ordinary kind of working stiff, so
right,
to speak.
But nobody in the Socialist Workers Party is a working stiff. That's part of the interesting element of the party, you know, and also some of its hypocrisy. Although, you know, with my mother, I mean, she did grow up middle class. She had a hard upbringing, and my father, certainly coming from Iran, he was born there in the 1930s and had experienced the coup in 1953. So they were not without hardship, but the idea that they were factory workers or coal miners or garment seamstresses, no, they were not those things.
So had them joining the party change both of their lives, and where do you factor into all of this?
I think probably the main way it changed their lives was obsession. It became the primary focus for them. It demanded all of their energy, their time, money, and most importantly, their passion. And having three children, I was the youngest of three. There was not time for us. There was not time for them to have a proper family. And I would also say that, you know, one of the aspects of the Socialist Workers Party is that it does not encourage family. It's considered bourgeois. Marriage is considered bourgeois.
And your father did actually end up leaving your mother when you were about, what, 9 months old?
9 months old, that's right. And I saw him very rarely until I was about the age of 18. But it's sort of the culture of the party to tacitly encourage people to have relationships that are not solid. One interesting thing that I talk about in the book is boyfriends and girlfriends or husbands and wives are never referred to by those names. They're called companions because, again, the whole idea of family is considered a bourgeois construct.
So is that how your parents sort of considered each other? Was that why it made it easier for your father than to walk out on your mother when you were 9 months old?
You know,
how did she react to that?
How did my mother react? Not well. She never recovered from that. She never dated again. And she essentially pined after my father throughout my entire childhood. I don't know if they consider themselves companions, but I think the thing is that my father would have been applauded in his action to some degree, that look, what you're doing is you're leaving your family, but you're leaving your family for this greater good, which is the socialist revolution. And in that, the politics of the party come into play.
Mm. And she, I think in the book you say that, you know, she reminded you many times that, you know, he kind of like left her and he gave her 24 hours notice. But, you know, he was leaving for the good of the party,
right,
because he was this noble man. And you bought into that?
I bought into it. And I certainly did.
And what about now?
You know, that's when you see your heroes for who they are. A little bit of a Wizard of Oz type thing, looking behind the curtain. It began to dawn on me, I don't know, at some point in my 20s, that what I had thought my father had left me for was not really what he had left me for. I mean, I one of my sort of criticisms about the Socialist Workers Party is that they've been in existence for almost 70 years, and you cannot really find sort of any change that they've made in American history. So it began to dawn on me that my father had left because he was this wonderful revolutionary, and this had sort of consoled me throughout my childhood. And then at a certain point, I started to realize that there was more to it than that, or actually that that's not what had happened. I really could not point to what my father had done.
I'm Daljit Dhaliwal in today for Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC and WNYC.org, and I'm talking with Saeed Seyrafrizadeh, who has spent his childhood working, at least at that point, to make the comrades proud. And he tells the story of his youth in When Skateboards Will Be Free, a memoir of a political childhood. When Skateboards Will Be Free. Talk about that.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that.
you didn't want it was what, a green skateboard that,
yeah,
you were waiting for, $10.99?
When I was 8, the title comes from an anecdote when I was about 8 years old, and I had asked my mother to buy me a skateboard, and we went to Sears department store, and we saw the big bin, and I said, I'd like the green one, and she said, well, we can't afford that, but when the revolution comes, everyone will have a skateboard because all skateboards will be free.
So how were you involved with the Socialist Workers Party? Were you out there selling the militant and turning up at
No, I never sold the militant, but I certainly accompanied my mother on her Saturday afternoons when she sold the militant. There was the annual national convention that took place in Oberlin, Ohio, that I would go to. I would go to meetings. I mean, I was a child. I was a hanger-on. I was not actively an active participant. I was far too young. But the party permeated my life. I mean, the ideas of it, and I accompanied her to demonstrations. And
so, you know, she altered her life, and as a consequence, your life was altered.
Absolutely.
To be a good member of the party.
Absolutely. And my thinking was altered, and my behavior.
And you write about, you know, how you lived with intentional poverty, that this sense of deprivation that you had. What was that like for you? I'm particularly intrigued when I was reading that story about how you really wanted grapes.
That's right. That was in 1973, and I have a chapter in the book about the United Farm Workers boycott of table grapes and iceberg lettuce that my mother honored, as did the Socialist Workers Party. The story I tell about that episode is that it created in me a severe sense of deprivation, where I was in constant longing for grapes, and it really put me at odds, not just with my mother, but also with my own feelings of desire as a child. And this is sort of something that's replayed throughout my childhood, of that we should not, and this is in no way saying that the United Farm Workers should not have had a boycott. I mean, that's not my argument, but the idea that...
You didn't feel that you were entitled to have stuff.
That's right. And we should keep our desire at bay. Under capitalism, that's not something, that, you know, those are not our aspirations.
And when did you start shoplifting?
I stole when I was a child. I stole from stores, and I stole I can't remember my earliest time. Well, actually, the moment, I guess, when I first stole was at the supermarket when my mother allowed me to eat the grapes within the supermarket because this was sort of a happy compromise between us. I was eating grapes, but I was we were not purchasing them. So in some ways, we were actually strengthening the farm workers' struggle by, you know, helping to reduce the profit of the supermarket.
But by stealing, did your mother also sort of suggest that it was a way of kind of like sticking it to the system?
Every crime against society is a good crime. That's what my mother would tell me. And my mother, I would see my mother stealing as well from places. I don't remember her stealing from stores, but there were always little things like we wouldn't pay for library books. She would take things from the doctor's office, you know, minor things, but, you know, they add up. And the idea, again, is that these are okay crimes because they're hurting this society that is at base unwell.
And what's your relationship like now to your parents? I mean, you've written this book. Have they both read it? Have they seen it? Do they know about it?
I sent a copy to my mother, and I had no idea how she would react. And I have to say, she sent me the most beautiful email, saying that she thought it was just a really wonderful book, and that I had, really vividly portrayed our lives together. And she was proud of me, and I attribute some of her ability some of her ability of that response is the fact that she has left the Socialist Workers Party. She left over 20 years ago. So she sort of has recreated a life for herself.
Why did she leave?
I think she couldn't take it anymore. I think she realized that she had, spent 20 some years giving everything she had to this organization. What she really wanted to do in life was to be a writer. She wasn't doing that. Again, all of your time goes into this organization. And she finally left. The reason why I bring that up, though, her leaving, is that my father is actually still a member of the party. He's a leading member. And subsequently, he hasn't spoken to me in about 3.5 years since an initial part of this book was published in Granta magazine in 2005. I have no idea if he has read the book or if he ever even read the Granta piece. I know that he knows of it through other comrades in the Socialist Workers Party who have sent me nasty emails saying, how dare you say these things about your father? I happen to know he's a wonderful man and that he did not abandon you. Especially in one email, I realized midway through that
confused you with your siblings.
Exactly. That's exactly right. That they didn't know. And I don't know if he's read the book. I don't think he has. I don't think he ever will. And I'm not sure if he will ever speak to me again. And this is sort of the thing I had, this was the risk I was taking. And I think it's a risk, it's worth it, I think.
Right. And your dad lives in New York. He lives in Brooklyn, right?
He lives in Brooklyn.
And you think that he would be very upset and disappointed at the book because you criticized him as a father and because of his politics?
It's interesting because I think there might be two layers working. I think part of it is certainly that I've criticized the politics. I think, and that really gets him where he lives. But I think underneath that is that in order to confront the book, he would have to confront the actions, the result of his abandonment on me. And he would have to acknowledge that. And I think that would be too much for him to bear. And I think in order to just sort of avoid that, he needs to say, look, you've criticized politics, you've criticized socialism, I don't want anything to do with you. But I really feel like underneath there's a deeper thing, which is I can't face what I've done to my son.
I'm Daljit Dhaliwal in today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org. And my guest is Saeed Seyrafrizadeh, who spent his childhood working, as we were hearing, to make the comrades proud. And he tells that story of his youth in a book called When Skateboards Will Be Free, a memoir of a political childhood. And it's published by the Dial Press. So what are your thoughts on politics now? How do you feel about politics? How do you feel about political ideology, in a society like the United States, which, can be very polarizing?
Sure. my first response is I'm completely exhausted by politics.
It's burnt you out?
Yeah, I'm burned out, and I don't want to think about it. I think about it quite a bit. And I still, you know, I consider myself to be liberal or left, although I know that the Socialist Workers Party would consider me reactionary or counter-revolutionary. So to some degree, it's relative. I certainly like to avoid labels as much as I can. I still follow. I try to follow. You know, it's very difficult for me to think independently. I can't read a newspaper article without thinking, oh, what would my father say? What would the Socialist Workers Party say about this? I have to sort of go through that initial...
But you're an adult now. I mean, why do you still have to go through that process?
It's deeply ingrained. It's very deeply ingrained. I think the connection, you know, the sense of betrayal, too, what I've done. I mean, this was my family, the Socialist Workers Party, and by writing this book and by telling my story, I've left that family. I've left that comfort. It's an internal thing, and it's always a way for my father and I to connect. I tell a story in the book about meeting my father for dinner, and we have, you know, some of our warmest moments are talking about politics. So I think there's always that first impulse to say, hey, what would my dad say about this?
Do you vote?
I do vote.
Did you vote in 2008?
I did vote in 2008. And with a lot of guilt, I have to say, I pulled the lever for Barack Obama. I wanted to, but I also knew...
You mean guilt in the sense that you weren't voting for a socialist?
That's right. Roger Calero. That was the Socialist Workers Party candidate. But it was a huge... You know, I know for most of my friends, voting for Barack Obama was a no-brainer. I was a fan of his, but it came with a sense of betrayal.
Mm. You're Iranian. Your father is Iranian. Your mother is American, is an American Jewish woman who was born in the United States. Your dad was born in Iran, right?
That's right.
So what was it like for you being Iranian, being Jewish, growing up in
Pittsburgh, not very good.
With a strange name.
That's right. With a strange name during the Iran hostage crisis, it's not a good place to be. You know, it's interesting because I don't think I even really thought of myself as being Iranian until the Iranian Revolution, until 1979, when it became a topic of conversation in my school. That's when I began to have this awareness. And I should point out that my father actually returned to Iran in 1979 to help found the Socialist Workers Party of Iran. And ended up running for president in 1980 for that country, in that country's first election ever. He ran as a socialist. But
was he arrested?
He was arrested. He was arrested in 1982, and he was put in prison for 66 days. But growing up in Pittsburgh, yeah, with this this huge last name, which to some degree. Really obliviates the fact that I am Jewish, that I have this other side of me. You know, I have to say, Barack Obama, you know, I see a lot of similarities in us that, you know, he has this name. He's an American. He was born in the United States, but he has this name. He has a mother who's white. But, you know, you look at him and you think, oh, here's an African man and, you know, what his identity is. But in 1979, during the Iran hostage crisis, I made the foolhardy mistake of saying that I actually supported the hostage takers in taking those 52 Americans hostage. And I almost immediately lost all my friends in class and faced a lot of humiliation and hostility for that. And of course, what I was doing was I was following the party line.
Mm. What was it like for you, just making friends? I mean, given, you know, the kind of politics that your parents were involved in, it must have been pretty hard for
to
hold down friendships. I mean, were you sort of shy, retiring? What was...
You know, I think I certainly avoided talking about politics with friends. And I did that, you know, even into my adult years. It was not something I wanted to get into. Because I was embarrassed by it, and I knew it was something that was odd and unusual. But
you mean in the sense that you have not thought through your own politics as a sort of as a grown person?
No, because as a grown person, I considered myself a communist. If anybody asked me what I was, you know, and if I had the guts, I'd say I'm a communist. I had never really thought that I'd be anything else. That's, of course, that's what I would be. That's what I was raised. But as a child, yeah, I mean, I had to, you know, part of a difficulty was that we moved around a lot. I was born in Brooklyn. We moved to Pittsburgh. We moved around in Pittsburgh, neighborhood to neighborhood. So it was very hard for me to feel like I had roots anywhere. And then I had this additional element of the politics. But again, you know, I sent, you know, children don't talk about politics, and I wouldn't talk about politics.
And what about the additional element of the religion?
Being Jewish.
And your father is a Muslim, I
You know, we're atheists.
You're atheists. Yeah, so of that, course, that, yes. There's not supposed to be any religion.
That made it very easy, yes.
Yeah. But in terms of the sort of the wider world, because, you know, people are going to be curious about
That's
your
right.
name.
That's right.
You kept your father's name.
I kept my, right. I never thought about changing it. It's interesting because both my brother and sister who grew up with my father have long ago changed their names. And here I am, who I didn't know my father growing up, and I'm the one who has held on to it all these years.
So why was that then, given the fact that, you know, your dad abandoned you?
It was the only connection I had.
Very rarely see him. And
it was the only connection I had. It was the only connection I had, and it was also my mother's, you know, my mother adored my father, you know, after he left. She worshipped him, and she loved him, and those parts of me, the Iranian parts, she really celebrated. And I write about in the book, she celebrated it to the detriment of the Jewish side. You know, that was not something, she did not think of herself as a beautiful woman. So she certainly wasn't going to, you know, try to enhance those aspects in me that she saw in herself. I was the Iranian boy. And, you know, my name was a big part of that. And she loved my name. And it was the only connection I had to my father.
Do you follow Iranian politics closely? I mean, it seems not to have been out of the headlines since 1979. I mean, are you confident that there may be some kind of rapprochement between the United States and Iran at some point?
I'm not confident in that.
Following the headlines, not even a little bit?
Yeah, no, I'm not. I mean, I follow it to some degree. I'm certainly not an expert in any way. I know I always cringe when the president of Iran says something that's criticized in the newspapers because it brings me right back to 1979, those feelings of humiliation. And but I'm not confident that there would be any sort of love affair between the United States and Iran. I would hope so. I always fear that there will be a war, that the United States will attack Iran. It's funny because I was with some Iranian group. I read at a in front of some Iranian Americans last week, and I was really struck about how sort of un-Iranian I felt. I thought I would feel a real kinship, and to some degree I did, but I think when it comes down to it, I'm an American, and I lived here my whole life, and I don't speak Persian. I've never been to Iran. I don't really know much about the culture. This is sort of the result of being abandoned by my father, and so the result of that is that I just don't feel much of a connection sometimes to Iran.
I've been speaking with Saeed Serafrizadeh, and he's the author of When Skateboards Will Be Free, published by the Dial Press. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
And Saeed Serafrizadeh will be reading along with Jonathan Safran Foer tonight at 7:30 at Park Slope. That's 107 in PS 107 in Park Slope in Brooklyn. For more information, visit our show page at WNYC.org. Up next, in honor of Earth Day, hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons discusses his new contest to get America's colleges to reduce their carbon footprints. I'm Daljit Dhaliwal in today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org.